And the Minnesota Stroke Association looked at all the different resources in the community and compiled them for stroke survivors and their caregivers. Your doctor can refer you to the Minnesota Stroke Association or your nurse, the resource facilitation. You can go to the website. But these are nice because they address a lot of issues that have to do with disability and how to adapt and how to find resources for your disability. Of course, you know, the more educated you are, you know, the more confident you will be about the care provided to your loved one. The knowledge comes, of course, from various sources, and usually stroke support groups tend to invite experts every meeting to talk about one aspect or another of stroke. And so that's a good thing. And meeting with your stroke specialist, your stroke nurse, your stroke therapists, these are always good resources for information.
Dr. Hussain, we have to wrap up, but it's been very knowledgeable. Thank you so, so very much for your time.
Thank you, Sam, and thank you, Charlene. This has been good, and I appreciate you inviting me.
You've been listening to Disability in Progress. The views expressed on this show are not necessarily those of KFAI or its board of directors. If you'd like to be on my email list, you can email me at disabilityandprogress@samjasmine.com and find out what's coming up. I'm Sam Jasmine. Charlene Dahl is my PR research person. We've been speaking with Dr. Haitham Hussain, talking about strokes. This is KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and KFAI.org. Thanks for listening. Take care.
Brown skin, you know I love your brown skin. I can't tell where yours begins, I can't tell where mine is. Brown skin, up against my brown skin. Need some every now and then. People from maybe Mississippi or Ireland. Apparently your skin has been kissed by the sun. You make me want a Hershey's kiss, your licorice. Every time I see your lips, it makes me think of honey-coated chocolate. Your kisses are worth more than gold to me. I'll be your almond joy, you'll be my sugar daddy. Brown skin, you know I love your brown skin. I can't tell where yours begins, I can't tell where mine is. Brown skin, up against my brown skin. Need some every now and then. Something magnetic pulls me and I can't get out. Disoriented, I can't tell my up from down. All I know is that I wanna lay you down. Every time I let you in, abracadabra magic happens as we swim. Higher and higher, finally we reach heaven. Come back to earth. Brown skin. You know I love your brown skin.
Good evening, Twin Cities, and you are listening to KFAI Radio 90.3 FM, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and around the world at KFAI.org, a non-commercial, community-powered radio. Happy Thursday evening. It is June 11th, 2026. Yes, and I am your girl, Shimmer, and I use she, her, lady, women, glittery pronouns, and this is Fresh Fruits, the longest-running LGBTQ IS2+ show in the nation, in the country, and tonight it is the second Thursday of the month. And of course, I'm with the one and only, the shamazing DJ Daddy Rocks in the studio. And we're getting rocks situated. We have a very special guest in the studio who I am super excited about. We have burlesque performer, one of my favorites, Trey DeMarc, is in the studio with us. But we're going to get Trey settled in. And just a reminder, if you love KFEI, you love the shows that you hear, it's super easy. All you have to do is go on to kfai.org and you can backtrack into the archive section and you can download and listen to your favorite program, which is available for 2 weeks. Hey, Rox.
Hey, Shimmer. How's it going?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm so good.
You know, I love, today was my favorite day because it rained.
Okay, you love the rain.
I do. I love the rain. Literally, this is like my vibe right now. I could be sitting on the porch, drinking some lavender chamomile tea and writing. This is very like healthy for me. So I love me some good rain.
You'd be a Seattle girl. You'd
yes, Seattle yes. I love, 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 love rain. We have a very special guest in this studio, and I think I should just do a fabulous introduction. I can do that while we get our fabulous friend situated. It's been such a long time since they've been in the studio, but hailing from Minneapolis, Minnesota, Trey DeMarc is an international burlesque sensation that cannot be duplicated. Known for their trademark combination of sass and bleep, we can't say it on the air, so I'll just say booty. They are ready to leave their stamp and a fair amount of glitter, okay, that makes Shimmer happy, and sweat on any stage they meet. They are a cast member of Black Hearts Burlesque and Sovereignty's productions. Locally in the Twin Cities, this multi-award winning performer began their burlesque career in August of 2013 at the Nudie Newbie Amateur Reveal Show, where they won that month's newbie competition. And since then, they have performed in more than 40 festivals around the globe, being featured internationally at the Vienna Burlesque Festival and the 2016 Amsterdam Burlesque Awards. They have competed in the 2018 Mr. Exotic World Best Burlesque category at the Burlesque Hall of Fame in Las Vegas, Nevada. They were crowned King of Burlesque at the Norway pageant in 2020 and was voted one of the top 50 most influential burlesque industry figures of 2020 and 2022 by thousands of burlesque peers and fans worldwide. Please give a shamazing warm welcome to the one and only Trey DeMarc.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for having me on here. It's been a while since I've been in here. Mm-hmm. Good to be back.
Yes. I just saw your beautiful, shamazing face a couple of weeks ago.
Yes. At the Trans Power Summit.
Yes.
Yeah, that was great. It was great to run into a whole bunch of familiar faces. I got called like real last minute to come in and work that event, and it was just great to meet new friends, old friends, and really be in a wonderful, productive, happy, safe environment.
I love that. And you were doing fabulous work there, making sure that everyone was getting into their sessions.
Yeah, so being a little wayfinder.
Yeah. And you also checked me in into the glam area.
I sure did. Get your photo shoot, get your makeup done.
Yes.
Cover girl, okay?
Oh my gosh. It's been such a long time. I feel like you were here way back, probably when I started.
Yeah.
With Rox.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's been like probably... Maybe I'm thinking like 10 years, but I feel like maybe you were on a little bit earlier than that, but it's been a while when I was kind of starting out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you've grown just to be a beautiful, amazing voice on the airways.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So you have been doing a lot of work and of course performing, and I would love to chat with you on a couple of things, you know, because I am a big pop culture fanatic.
Okay, mm-hmm. Yes, come on.
You yep. know, and I'm a big fan of yours, and you know, listen, Shimmer is a big burlesque fan, okay? Mm-hmm. So I love burlesque now. Mm-hmm. Listen, if
you love the glitz, you love the glamour, you love the rhinestones, you love the feathers, baby. Okay. I know you do, okay?
Yeah. You know, if I feel like Shimmer could get on stage, you know, and shake them cha-chas, darling, you know.
You could.
Yes, you could.
Even that, you don't even have, sometimes you don't even have to shake the cha-cha. Yes. You could just be a sultry little minx on the mic, you know, with a wonderful voice and be like next to the stage, you know.
Next to the incomparable, the legendary Foxy Tan.
Yes.
Foxy Tan, who's like a legendary voice. Mike, MCist, you know, doing her thing.
That's my mom. That's my burlesque mom.
That's your mom.
Right?
That's your mom. Your mom was talking mad love about you at the Dragged Out performance. And that happened last weekend. Sorry you missed my drag performance.
I did. I was in Canada, I think, when that happened. Yeah.
How was I did Bruno Mars, just by the way.
I know.
Chunky.
I mean, listen.
You want to leave the door open for me, Rox?
Yeah.
I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Literally, if you go on Rox's social media, they literally, no lie, they ate Bruno Mars up. I was like, yes, Rox. Rox did that. Rox literally embodied Bruno. Listen, okay.
I tried.
The hair, the curls, the sunglasses. I mean.
Listen, the daddy for a reason. Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm.
24 karat magic.
24
you know?
Karat.
Right. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. All right. So I want to know, how was Canada, by the way?
It was great. I did two shows in Calgary. That's where I went for that. And I performed with a giant live band in front of 300 Canadian folks.
Okay.
And I was their headliner, and it was great and fantastic.
Yay.
And it was just, the energy was just feeling good. I had a lot of my like feather fans and things, and people were like, oh my God, you were so amazing. You were the best of the night. And I was like, you should live here. And I'm like, Canada, if I wasn't doing so much important work back in the States, I definitely would. Cause I love that, Minnesotans, we think of ourselves as Diet Canada. Canada, like we've been trying to get Canada to adopt us for so long. Mm-hmm. And after going back and forth there a couple of times for a while, I'm like, I get it. I think we should be a part of the Canadian provenance.
Interesting. There's been a lot of talk of that since 2020.
We want to be adopted. But, you know, there's a lot of important work that needs to be done here.
That's true.
So, that's what I am all about doing here, is supporting Black art and Black joy.
And you do that so well. And this is a month where your artistry really shines and your production skills really shine.
Yes.
And your creative capital gets used all over the place. You're dropping down those invites, and you're putting on this show that really encompasses Black diaspora.
Yes.
But more so this like super rich, like BIPOC excellence. Yeah.
It is my love letter to not only... So, let me restart. Juneteenth Jubilee is the name of the show. It is in its fifth year running. It's a show that I think that I have birthed from myself, because I spend so much of my own time, energy, and finances on that show. Because even right now, I feel busted because I've been spending money on other things than myself. But the show started as a creation, as a love letter to not only my Black burlesque community, but also to my Black community as a whole. In burlesque, it is mostly seen to the greater wider area as a white sport. Like when you ask people off the street if they know a burlesque dancer, typically if they do,
Dita Von Teese.
That's yes. be the first person that they would think that she is the most mainstream,
right,
recognizable burlesque performer. And she has, you know, all the endorsement deals and stunning costumes. And she does a lot of work in her own community and environment. But 9 times out of 10, they can never name a black burlesque performer. And there are a lot of black burlesque performers who have performed with Dita, that Dita's hired and booked, that doesn't also get the recognition. And I mean, in the same way that Dita gets. I mean, even though Dita's the big headliner show, but like for these other black bodies to be on the stage with her, the fact that people can't remember their name is heartbreaking. And so this was a way for me to get people, especially black folks, to see black burlesque and realize that there are people out there trailblazing in this art form and leading the way in what is like black excellence in burlesque, what is black creativeness in burlesque, what is black joy in that environment, movement, you know. So it's really seeing that like there's a lot that goes into it, and like we are constantly out here proving ourselves that we are like worthy of being visible, and this is my way of giving that visibility back to the community.
You know, and I was recently listening to an interview with you, because you know that's how I, you know, of course, because I adore you. You also talked about this. You've been doing Juneteenth Jubilee for almost 5 years, and you just mentioned that a lot of people can't name a black burlesque performer, hence Redbone.
Yep.
Right.
Local. Redbone. We love a Redbone. Right, we ain't sad that she moved to San Francisco, but we love us a Redbone. Yeah, big Redbone. Sis.
Yes. One of the most talented, gifted black burlesque performers there is. I mean, if you have not seen Redbone perform,
you can see her this next weekend. Yeah, she'll, okay, she'll be here. Okay.
Okay. Yay. Okay. I'm going to that show.
Yes.
I remember when Rox introduced me to Redbone, and amazing. Like, I was just, wow. I mean, like just the costume, just the body movements, just really just captured your attention. Like when you watch Redbone on stage, you as well, you know? So of course it's just really powerful that you do this. And I'm really proud that you've been doing this for 5 years.
Yes. It's been, and everything, when you have joy, there's also the side of grief when you're like struggling to be like, figure out the finances and get it to fun and get people involved and interested in, especially like not only like black folks, but also the people that have the money, like white folks, to be like, you need to help make this beautiful black thing happen. Put your dollars where your activism is, you know? Yes. And so it takes a lot to be able to produce this. Like, my big thing is like, I start producing a Juneteenth Jubilee right after it's done. I take a whole year to, and I just want to produce this one big thing. And so it takes me that year amount of time to plan and craftily create something. Because also I'm a weird Aquarius, and I'd love to procrastinate a little bit. So I'm like, I need that amount of time to really bring an experience. It's not just a regular show. It's not just, and not to say that in a bad way of like not supporting my burlesque community here, but like it is a black festival weekender situation that I create for people to enjoy as like a one-time experience. Like this year, I've brought number one burlesque performer in the world, Jezebel Thunder from Las Vegas, Nevada. She just stepped down as their current reigning queen of burlesque this year. So this would be her first out-of-town gig after her step down. And she was voted number one burlesque performer. Also, number three burlesque performer in the world, and was the princess of burlesque last year. So reigning right under Jezebel Thunder. Foxy Lexi Brown from Montreal, Canada is going to be here. And she is stunning. She does ballroom, Vogue. She's a model. She's a stunning
house
goddess. Yes.
Disco.
Yes. She is, she is body tea. Okay. And then just like my other like wonderful family familia, Aquarius Moon, the It Girl of Burlesque, which we have partnered together to bring. So Aquarius is in charge of Metro Cabaret, and Everybody Wants to Be a Showgirl, which is a museum exhibit to celebrate the history of specifically black showgirls, black burlesque, and also like just history of other BIPOC burlesque and showgirl throughout the years. And so they did a big exhibit in Detroit during the month of Black History Month. And now we're going to bring it here to Minneapolis in a pop-up format at the Rose Academy of Burlesque. So that we can show the archival history of Juneteenth throughout the 5 years and other burlesque legends and heroes throughout the Black burlesque diaspora. And we're just super excited for that to happen. I also have my right-hand girl, Twirlisha Devine. She will be also in Indiana. She will also be curating a museum exhibit there. She's the curator of Legends and Icon, which is a Black burlesque similar to mine's in Indiana. She was one of the first people to really get the legend, and I'm forgetting her name right now, but she's from Hawaii, and I know I'm sorry. It's been a long day at work, and I love her so dearly. But she does a lot of work in the community for that. And then, you know, I like to bring a little fun and surprise every now and then. So from King of Drag, fourth runner-up, Mr. Congeniality, we have King Percocet coming into town. He is going to be great. I'm super excited to bring him here. And partnership with Andre for Black Boy Joy as well. Nice. So he'll be at that show as the official after party for Juneteenth. And then Switch to Boy Wonder from Chicago, who is a sexy heartthrob. He's been here plenty of time. I think a lot of Minneapolis people know Switch and his sexy swing ways. So I'm excited to see that.
And then I know we'll a lot of people are excited to see Switch again.
Oh, yeah. Listen, we love a Switch.
We do. Okay? Right.
We love a Switch Boy Wonder.
We do.
And then I also have first runner-up from last year from Best Debut, Nami Flair, coming into town. Redbone, as I say it again. So a lot of this cast is really stacked, as well as a lot of local people like JoJo Ventus, yes. Joel D. Principal, Kamari Williams, okay. Lala Luscious.
Yes.
Unofficial headliner. Okay. You know, a lot of wonderful, amazing human beings that are here local that have been putting in the work. And I like to have like that great mix of local talent and international, national talent to help like make it fit and work together in the mold for that.
Wow.
Shimmer, I know you probably got more questions. I do have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
And I think it's this thing that's been on my mind a lot about cutie pock economics. And as someone who has been producing shows for a long time, I know what it means to reach down in your pocket and pull out the $10 or $20 or $50 that you need to get whatever it is, plates, ice, pop, you know, somebody needs safety pins. Somebody needs, you know, a wig. Somebody needs, you know,
blue hair, nails,
you know, whatever. And in those moments, it's usually the producer or the promoter or their right-hand person who goes and does that run. And it's the producer is not necessarily giving them the money to do it. They're going in their own pocket, or the producer is going in their own pocket to give their right-hand person money. And I feel like this happens over and over and over, specifically for BIPOC producers. And I want to know how we can do something different. Like, I don't know if you fantasized or dreamed about this. For me, it's often a thing of white folks come in and use our talent. And what I mean by that is they, quote unquote, hire you to do a gala, pay you a fourth of what you're worth, or they ask you to do it for free for exposure, or they don't go through you or your company. They go around you and your company and ask the person on the first of the month, when they know that person doesn't have any money, and they get it for really cheap. And I'm wondering, as queer people of color who produce shows, what can we do differently so that we're not constantly going in our pocket. We're not constantly like giving up our intellectual knowledge, our value, our ideas, our creativity for folks who then go and make a huge profit. Because usually our intention is not to create a huge profit, but to create exposure, to create visibility, to celebrate our people, to give our people stage. And then we have white producers who come in and kind of nab our people, maybe pay them a little bit of money, but then don't support them throughout the rest of the week, the rest of the month. And so when they're breaking down and they're crying and they can't pay their rent or they need 10 extra bucks for parking or whatever it is, they're often coming to us, not those people who put them on stage. And so I'm wondering, have you dreamed about this? Have you fantasized about this? Do you have any ideas about how we can really have equity for our creativity?
That is such a real question, especially because that is something that, like, as you're asking and speaking, I'm like, those things I definitely have been doing all week.
I know you have.
All month, all week, up to the point. And... like, the short answer is I don't know, because the long answer is, like, the world has been so built to work against us in that way that, like, it's just been so, I feel like, institutionalized in the fact of, like, I have seen white shows struggle less than black shows, struggle less than I have to put on something big and magnificent. This was a year for me, like, I was learning how to do grants, and like every grant that I applied for, I got denied from.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a very much learning curve to watch and see white people not only get grants and funding and sponsorship and donations and roll through, to feel like there's been times where I've been even like ashamed or sad to even ask for donations, because mm-hmm. I'm like, if I'm doing something beautiful on Black Weekend and I'm deciding to do it, that the onus is on me. But also I'm like, but I should get the community involved in this as well, and I shouldn't be ashamed of feeling like I need to ask for help in that way. I'd be like, hey, just give $20 or $50 for me to be able to do this, to be able to help fund housing, you know, for these Black performers that I'm bringing out of town.
Mm-hmm.
For that, because it's also like ticket sales don't move fast either when you put it on. I'm sitting, you know, like right now I have 2 days events at Lush, you know, 20 tickets or so. Tickets mostly don't sell until the day of. So, you know, I'm confident that we're going to sell out, but also it's the harrowingness of like, will we or won't we still?
Mm-hmm.
But watching, you know, white counterparts be able to be like, oh, my show is sold out, or we're like 80% capacity before mm-hmm. we're even 2 weeks ahead. And it's just a feeling of being like, I want people not to just talk about wanting to be in solidarity or wanting to be an ally. I want people to really show that they can be an ally. And even if they can't afford to do anything, because we all know in this current economy and this Trump administration, it is hard, mm-hmm. right? But even to be like being vocal about it, using your voice to uplift another voice and being like, let's share, let's say something, let's do something, let's help encourage other people to like be a part of the thing, is just as monumental as giving something to. So, I feel like it's even pulling teeth in that, right? About being like, hey, so-and-so, could you just post or share about the show? I think, especially in a niche art form, there's a crab bucket mentality that if it's not about them, if they're not being the star, if they're not being pushed up on the pedestal, like, they have to call somebody else back if they're getting too far, or that like it's not me, so why should it be you kind of deal, instead of if we all really worked together, we would be able to have more things, right? And I'm not saying that everybody has to work together, because we can't, it's not RuPaul's best friend race. We all can't braid our own hair, right? No, right? Friend's hair. But if we were like, okay, how can I make our pool thrive?
Yes.
Thrive. In an economy where we're not having to worry about, oh, we're bringing so-and-so from in town and they can get paid an equitable wage to come into town and do work, and not feeling like they have to hustle enough to do it, or and feeling important and feeling good about the work that they're doing. Because that's the other thing, like the pay scale is always fluctuating, it's always different, and I try to work for an equitable pay performer. Again, like me as a producer, for this show, I've gotten flux kickback from like my tickets being $45 for the show, and I'm like, that's not a bad ticket price comparing of like you're gonna go see so and so, the Target Center for like $200 something. Yeah. And granted, like they're a celebrity or whatever, right? But like for a community based show of $45, in order to meet a bottom line to have everybody else paid, and not even myself, because my goal is to try to break even,
right?
Because I'm already in debt.
But you're gonna pay $10 to $20 to go to any club,
yeah,
you know, and you're not gonna get specialized performance. You're not gonna get a buy and for kind of thing, and so $45 does seem prohibitive in some ways, right? But I remember there was a time where we got flack for charging folks $5 for a show and a meal, right? And I think it goes back to that thing about, who are you to charge $45? Why would I pay $45 to go see a BIPOC show? Where that question doesn't necessarily come up if you're going to go and spend, you know, $10 to $20 to get into the 90s or Lush or sometimes the Saloon for a show. And so I want to...
I would say even that, but like regular theater too. Like,
yeah,
if you ever been to a regular theater show throughout the community of it, you know, like those ticket prices are higher than that.
For sure.
So I'm like, if I'm going to go see a regular show at so and so theater, right? I'm like, that's like, for me, I feel like burlesque is on that same wavelength of theater like that, especially either community or high standing theater, that I'm like, at $45, that's a steal. You're getting an international award-winning burlesque performer who's performed all across the world, all across the nation, with other celebrities, and they're coming to do a show, and it's $45.
And it's sexy.
Right? It's a fun, good time.
It's a
super
fun, good time.
Sexy.
Good drinks, you know, have friends. But so it's like, it's just really trying to figure out, like, Michael's trying to get other people to be supportive and into it, especially Black folks to be supportive into it, because if the Black community were supporting these Black performers, then there wouldn't be a struggle of feeling like they're not good enough or not adequate enough because they're not getting paid enough, they're not getting costuming well, better than their white counterparts. You know, that they can actually feel like this is something that they can do as a job versus it being a hobby of an art form, you know. I stand on trying to make it very equitable for these performers to have pay. Even for like the local performers, they're only doing one act and they get paid $100. That's in burlesque world, that is a lot to be doing for just one act for, you know.
But that doesn't do anything to touch the outfit that they're wearing.
No.
That $100 doesn't pay for those sequins. No. It doesn't pay for the tape to tuck it and get everything all perfect and right. It doesn't pay for the makeup, right? And I think that when we think about this artist is getting $100 to spend 3 hours at the minimum, right? Because you need an hour to get ready. You have to be part of the show. So if you're in the first act or the second act, even if you're coming and doing your part and leaving, you are spending an hour at the show. You're spending an hour to get there and get ready. And then whatever you have to do to take off your outfit. So most people are spending a minimum of 2.5 hours being a 5-minute act in mm-hmm. a show. And that's a lot of time for 5 minutes of stage time. And when you think about the breakdown of what that $100 is for 2 hours and 30 minutes, $100 is not that much.
Yeah.
It's not that much. And I think that you paying your performers $100 for their set is outside of what the industry standard is. And I think as BIPOC producers, that is a thing that we're often trying to do, pay more. I know we try to pay more to those artists that are coming in to do stuff for Rare than what the typical standard pay is. And I think that's because we have so many other equity markers in our life that it feels only fair as that producer to honor their time.
It's the feeling of you've been through so much BS. That you are then like, I don't want anyone else to go through that. And so therefore I'm going to do my hardest to give an environment that is reflective of something better for somebody else.
Mm.
I think that is that giving heart mm-hmm. from that to happen and be like, I know what the industry standard is. I wish the industry standard was going to be more, so I'm going to make it more for this show. And if that means sometimes that just means if I bleed out, then I bleed out,
mm-hmm.
you know? And because that's the way that I kind of give, right? And I feel like, especially for BIPOC people, we shouldn't be bleeding out to give what, like, I even feel like I want to give more, right? And
yeah.
I can't give more if I'm bleeding out on the floor.
Right.
So I feel like it's just so hard to like to keep pushing through the ceiling and trying to keep pushing it and still feeling like mentally falling short. It's a lot to take on.
Yeah, I think that, you know, one of the things that we don't do is we don't get on the microphone and cry. And I've seen that happen so many times this year. And whether people are like kind of crying in gratitude, or they're crying because they're so proud of our community, or they're crying because they need more funds to be put back in their coffers. I've seen this happen time and time again this year, especially in response to Metro Surge, that it's something that I absolutely 100% refuse to do. I'm not going to get on the microphone. I'm not going to cry. And I'm not going to beg people for money. And I think that that's probably one of our shortcomings as producers of color, that it's something that feels really hard to do. And it's not that our people that we're producing don't deserve that. It's that our art form, our magic, isn't something to be groveled on. It's not a thing to get on the microphone and cry about. It's not a thing to beg people to support. And so we don't. And I think sometimes that keeps us a little bit under the marker between the red line and the black line, because some folks are willing to do that, and they do that so well that they often make more money than they're asking.
Mm-hmm.
And I really appreciate the fact that you had this idea and you shared your platform with others, because you could have just kept being the Twin Cities boylesque figure. You know, you kind of already had that title. You kind of, you know, I mean, Switch was here too, yeah. And Switch was doing that. But you held this as a thing that you were doing from this stance of being a guy doing burlesque in a way that wasn't just super feminine. It wasn't just all boas. You have some very masculine aligned outfits, and your performance is often very exciting to gay guys, and so that tells me that you have something that you're presenting that is this subcategory of burlesque, this boylesque, that is really cool. And I've seen you and a few other artists that take a masculine pose and soften it a little bit, mm-hmm. but don't necessarily feminize it. And I think that's a unique art form to be up there, to have your beard, to have your mustache, to have drapey clothes and sometimes really super tight clothes that the boys really, really love. Mm-hmm. And I think that's different than some of our art forms.
I love being able to flow through the divine masculine and divine feminine energy in performance art, because they're two sides of the same coin, and it really shows depth to a character, especially if you're doing something on stage where it's very sultry, where it's very funny, and being able to really like play with that with the audience, because they don't know what they're going to expect or what they're going to get. So sometimes being very soft and very tender is very warmth for somebody, very inviting for somebody to come in. And then tensing and being very rugged and very jagged can be very comforting in that sign of they're feeling like there's some security, and they're feeling very like safe in that space. They're, or you know, even they're feeling very verklumped and aroused even and titillated in that situation, right?
That got lots of hearts, by the way, yes. Just on my live feed.
So it's just one of those things of like burlesque and allowing people to express themselves in that factor, especially with gender and identity, especially if somebody considers themselves to be super femme, burlesque allows them to be comfortable in that femininity and be secure and not feel like they have to fight in the world against their femininity. They're allowing people to be invited in to see that, in the same way for like the masculine side as well. And so I really appreciate the performers that like just really enjoy showcasing what they do and how they feel and their comfortability of being able to be in a space to share their art like that.
I love the person in the Discord who is doing the money gesture. They're like doing the yeah baby and just flowing the money.
Dollars.
I think, you know, in response to that, like pay BIPOC artist well, support their shows, sponsor Trademark and the work that he's doing around the Juneteenth Jubilee. You can write big checks. He'll take them. Give him $1,000. You got it.
We got a sponsorship or we got things like that going on.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Shimmer, I took up some space. I know you got good questions, so you go.
No, you're good. I actually, I love the question that Rox answered. And before we do that, I'm going to play these announcements.
Yes.
Just so that we're on time, and then we'll come back. You are listening to Fresh Root and Rare Productions with DJ Daddy Rox and Shimmer. And we are speaking to the one and only, the international, yes, boylesque superstar Trademark. We'll be back in a short few minutes right here on KFEI's Fresh Fruits.
Programming on KFEI is supported in part by the Bush Foundation, investing in great ideas and the people who power them. Introducing the 2026 Bush Fellows, leaders working to make the region better for everyone. More information is online at bushfoundation.org.
Support for KFAI comes from the Amsterdam Bar and Hall, presenting Impaler, Friday, June 12th.
Minneapolis' own Impaler takes the Amsterdam stage by storm for the release of their latest album, Covered in Dirt.
Impaler has been shock-rocking the Twin Cities for over 40 years, and they show no signs of slowing down.
Joining them for the all-ages festivities are Dumpster Juice and Extermination Day. Opening the show is Die Hardcore.
More information about Impaler's album release show at the Amsterdam can be found at AmsterdamBarAndHall.com.
Welcome back to Fresh Fruit and Rare Productions right here on KFAI Radio with DJ Daddy Rocks and Shimmer. And we're speaking to the one and only, the shamazing international boylesque superstar, Trey DeMarc. And in the Discord chat, I did post a photo of them. And the question, I mean, I have so many questions because, you know, I'm a pop culture princess. And, you know, I know this answer because you know that D'Angelo was a song, How Do You Feel?
Yes.
I believe was the one that got you inducted.
Yes.
Into the Burlesque Hall of Fame. If I'm not, I hope I'm right.
You did your research.
I did,
It was my big competition piece back in 2018.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. See, Shimmer pays attention. Mm-hmm. Shimmer pays attention. Actually, there's so many questions I have, but I just want to, I really loved the question that Rox asked just a little bit ago. And Trey, I have to say that what you spoke about is so real because as a producer, you know, with a couple of fashion shows, a lip sync battle that I have, everything that you spoke about is absolutely real because honestly, from creating to directing to having your own vision, your idea, to your cast members, who you want to embody into your show, from the set design, from, you know, the set list, pretty much everything. And, you know, there's so much that you said is pretty much going into your own pocket because you want to do more. And you feel like when you do more, but you're not doing more, you want to do more and more. Mm. And I feel like this question that Rox asked is so real because I feel like also, too, this question also really could land to your mental health.
Yes.
Mm. And yes. I feel like for me as a creator and a producer myself, I have stepped back a little bit in the art scene just because I feel as a producer and a creator, I've had talks with Rox and AK about this probably within the last year and a half. And Rox was like, Shimmer, what's going on? And I kind of had a talk about it. And I feel like mental health is a big thing because there's so many hands in a pot of your idea and your vision.
Yes.
Right? And these people want to say, help you, but then they're not there because they can't make a meeting. They're not there because something has come up. They're not there because maybe they're not being paid enough. But at the same time, when you're a one-person producer, it takes a toll on your mental health. Mm-hmm. And so I just want to know if I can ask you, like, what has this been for you mentally and physically through production, being a burlesque performer?
Oh, mentally, baby, we're holding on by the grips of the bars. you know, it is one of those things of, like, there's a lot of, so, layers to it. I feel like there's a lot of social aspect layers that, like, I need to produce a show that is so marvelous that people see it in that aspect. And if that show fails, then that means, like, I didn't do my job and it's terrible. I never even look at it as a fault of, like, the performers. It's just more of like, oh my God, this show was not successful. I messed up and now I should go and hide away for years and not show my face, right? There's a lot of things that go into the mental scope of things of being like, why am I doing this? How did I even get to this point in life? Why should I even keep going, right? I put myself in a lot of precarious situations, financially and even mentally and physically, that I'm like, is it even worth it to continue to do this again next year, to continue to move it forward? Even this year, should I just stop? And there's a lot of those, like, shadow self, like, asking you these things and making you self-doubt these things. And I've been having a lot of spiritual conversations, a lot of tarot conversations of, like, the theme that has been overlying for the last couple of months has been to stay firm and your decisions. Stay, you're on the right path. When you make a decision, stand by it, stand through it. Yes, and even if it's the wrong decision, you know, like you can, you need to learn to accept it and lean back, learn from it, move on, grow, right? But if you feel like you're doing something important and you feel like you're doing something monumental, go forward in confidence and stand firm in that decision, because it's, you're moving in the right direction. Like that, and that's what's been constantly said to me, which I've been feeling like that's been definitely about my life aspects of like work and relationships and entertainment, and being like, okay, I am, the things that I'm doing now, I'm moving in the right direction. I've always been a person to be like, am I doing enough? Am I doing good? Right? I've always wanted to give good out into the world. And I think I'm starting to get to this point, especially my age, of just being like, as long as I can make somebody feel happy and I'm happy as well, that's good enough for me. And anything else is extra on top of the cake, right? Because I can't...
Lots of hearts for that. Lots of hearts.
I can't let things get to me too much. I can't, if somebody really wants something and they want to go after me for it, I'm a person, I move out the way and be like, you can have it. You can have it. If that's what you want, if you want to come take my idea, take my show, take a thing, that's fine. I used to have a crash outs and cry about things. I have opened, you know, the door to so many gateways and so many venues in the Twin Cities, and then watch people come after and be like, well, oh, I can do this here now, you know? Mm-hmm. But not even so much of a thank you for opening, making this accessible for us to be able to be here now for it.
Because they have no idea.
No idea the work that they went through for a black person to get that door open, and then for them to be able to easily walk through it as a white person.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I feel like also that's, like you just mentioned, it just stay in your joy.
Yeah.
Stay in your joy. I want to make sure that we talk really quickly. We have about 10 minutes for this event. But if you want to know more about Trademark, you can follow them. Their website is www.trademark.com. That's TREDAMARC.com.
She's not active right now. She's currently a work in progress on that website, but it will be up soon. But social media on Instagram is the best place.
It's at Trademark.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect.
Spell out Trey, because, you know, not everybody knows.
And that is on Instagram at hashtag or at Trey, TREDAMARC. And you can also follow them on YouTube, as well as youtube.com/@Trademark, and then Twitter, or now I think it's X now.
X now, yeah.
Yes. Trademark. So
all the things in my name. Also, Infringement Productions is the name of my production company. So that's where like all of the Jubilee stuff is rolling out for right now. So you can follow that on Instagram. And
And then for the event this month, if you want to just let our listeners know about it, when it is, what time, dates. We can't talk about money on the air, but obviously they can find out at social media, like for fee, time of show, door options, things like that.
Yeah, so this year's Juneteenth Jubilee, we will be back at Lush for two nights on June 18th for Thursday and June 19th on Friday. Doors are at 6, show starts at 7. There's information on Eventbrite. If you search Juneteenth Jubilee, it'll pop up with a wonderful purple and orange and black graphic for that. We also have, so it's a big weekender show, so we have the two big shows on that day, and then Sovereignty's production, which is a product of Sweet Pea's Performing Arts, Burlesque Extraordinaire. She has allowed me to take over her show. So we're doing La Folly's Burlesque, The Blackout, that Saturday on the 20th. And so it will be the out-of-town cast in that show. And then if we love a good speakeasy, baby, on Sunday night, there is, at 6, there is a show at Volstead's Speakeasy Emporium in Uptown that is owned by the wonderful and delectable Bessie Snow. And she has graciously allowed us to do a special Sunday event because normally they are closed on that day. And so that will end up wrapping up our weekend. All that information is on Eventbrite and Facebook as well. There's other things that are happening, classes that are happening at the Rose Academy. This is your time to learn from international award-winning burlesque performers that are teaching at the Rose Academy. Some of those classes are filled up. You can still, I highly, highly suggest you take Red Bones class. She still has a couple of spots left open, and she's teaching like how to be able to really create art from your inner self, and make full acts, and it is a one. I've read the syllabi; it's a wonderful class, so you should definitely take that class. And then visit the Everybody Wants to Be a Showgirl Museum in the same building in the Rose Academy as well. And then yeah, I think there's Black Boy Joyce, the after party of the weekend, so that will be happening at the Black Heart on Friday night for that show. And Andre's worked really hard to produce the show, and he's just been a wonderful pleasure human being to work with, so please go out and support him as well. And yeah, I think I've covered like, oh, there's so much stuff that I have been doing for this one weekend.
There is a question in the Discord chat, and somebody says they would love to go to the events. And their question is there a ticket? Is this a ticketed event or only at the door? Can they purchase tickets?
They can still purchase at the door. It is a ticketed event in the fact that you can still buy tickets.
Go on Eventbrite and get your ticket right now.
And then, but you can also, there will be door sales at the Lush show. I know the La Folly show, you only need to pay, I think, for entry into the Gay 90s to do that show on Saturday. So that's a more accessible night for people if they can't afford to come and see that show. And then Bessie has tickets for the Speakeasy on Volstead. There's going to be a bathtub, so you guys need to get there and see it. So that's like how I've kind of like worked the weekend. I'm like, these two big shows are like the big shows that like are what are effectively paying these people to perform throughout the weekend, or if they're locals, for them to get a little extra bread through this Juneteenth weekend. Because realistically, as Black folks, we should be resting. We shouldn't be doing a lot of work.
Yes. Resting. But rest is for the wicked.
Yes.
And you are young. And you can do it, and we can do it.
Yes.
And I'm thinking of this thing that you said a few minutes ago about wonderment of, do you stay in it? And I've had that same wonderment many times over the years when I think about Power to the People. And this year is our 25th anniversary in the park. You've performed on that stage.
I have before.
And you've even come to that stage after performing on others because you needed solace, because you needed love, because you needed to be surrounded by people of color. And I think that that's what our stage does. This year, we have some amazing guests at the Power to the People stage, including Bobby Sanchez, who is coming specifically to give love and honor to Nick Metcalf, a two-spirit leader in town who really helped start that stage. We also have Lieutenant Sonny and Kevin Chaos Moore and Batty Brooks and Elise King and Cool Breed and the Flamenco Dancers and the Pan African Steel Drum Players. We're going to have some amazing honoring of Nick at 2 p.m. on Sunday, and we're going to start the stage off with Two Spirit Elders blessing the stage with sage and song. And when I think about that journey, fighting against Twin Cities pride, fighting against people in community who told us things like, just get out of pride, there's no place for us there anyway, and working really hard to create this place that's celebrating 25 years this year. I just want to say, keep doing you. You know, Trey, keep being the magnificent, creative, innovative director, producer that you are.
Thank you. That's so much. And it means a lot to me, especially like when you said, like, being told, like, to, like, you should leave Pride and get out of that. And sometimes it's so hard because if, like, you sit there on one hand and be like, yeah, maybe the stuff that I'm going through is messed up or foul and all that stuff. But then on the other hand, when you think about, like, well, if I leave, there's not a space for these black bodies to be here.
Mm-hmm.
Then it just makes it more vacant for other things to run rampant. And so, like, being here is me being the wall to hold that up, and then having that wall to have a door for these bodies to be able to go through, these BIPOC bodies to be able to, like,
yes,
enter that's into. Sometimes it's difficult to be that.
It is. Sometimes it's difficult to be the door or the building or the bridge. But you do those things so well. And I know that Shimmer has the right song queued up for you as we go out today.
I do. It's been such an honor. Thank you.
Pleasure
to see the beautiful, amazing, my dear friend, Trademark Rocks. And I've been talking again to international superstar, boylesque performer, Trademark. And we're going to close out with some D'Angelo.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how do you feel? So we're going to close out with how do you feel right now on KFEI's Fresh Fruit and Rare Productions. Rox and I will see you next month. And stay tuned because we got Travoramo. Fa 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 up next on KFEI. Have a wonderful evening. Stay tuned.
Bye.
Come see us at Pride and the Juneteenth Jubilee.